In this episode of Hot Hardware's 2.5 Geeks, what happens in Vegas may not stay in Vegas, at least not for the CES 2019 show. We have AMD Radeon 7. We've got 10 nanometer Intel chips. We've got GeForce RTX 2060. Announcement of our Lenovo Hot Holiday Giveaway contest winners, and a whole lot more next. Well, hello there and welcome back. Happy New Year. Welcome back to another episode of Hot Hardware's 2.5 Geeks. And if we're looking both geekish and ragged, there's a reason for that. We just came back from the city that, if you stay long enough, will suck the soul, the life source right out of you. Right, Marco?
Oh my gosh, absolutely. So happy to be home.
I mean, it's a fun town, but when there's 180,000 of your closest friends all jammed into a couple of square blocks for a big tech show, it gets a little hectic, right? I mean,
yeah, you know. By closest friends, Dave means 200,000 smelly geeks.
Hey, smelly geeks are our friends, right? Yeah, no, we are. Exactly. We're probably kind of smelly ourselves right now because. Yeah, the road in Las Vegas can be long, and anyways, we're surviving. But hey, welcome back to the new year. We've got a lot going on in the launch of many products at CES, the platform that many tech companies and OEMs use for CES in Las Vegas in January. So tons of tech to talk about. You know, we're going to run down the headlines and sort of the highlights. But Marco, let's talk about, you know, what you think perhaps was some of the best stuff personally that you saw. And we know what's near and dear to our hearts. But what you know, we covered at Hot Hardware for the major headlines in tech. But what sort of stuck out? Was there one thing that you say, hey, that was worth the trip? That's a tough question.
So it's always worth the trip just to see everybody. You know, we running a virtual corporation like this, we interact with tons of companies, but we rarely get FaceTime unless we're at an event. So actually seeing everybody and shaking hands and, you know, thanking all the people we get to work with, that's the best part. That's what makes it worth it. Now, in terms of the tech, I'm really happy to see the updated Dell XPS 13. That machine, basically, everyone had one complaint, and that was the position of the webcam, the nose cam. And Dell has fixed that and kept the machine beautiful and introduced a new color. So I think that was hot. Lenovo had some beautiful machines and a really cool smart clock. Kind of a simple concept, but it was a cool little device. We saw that awesome 49-inch Samsung display, HDR 1000 display, basically like having two 27-inch 1440p displays side by side. Awesome display. And, you know, excited to see what AMD has coming and Intel has coming. So basically almost everything Intel announced was a 10-nanometer product. And after all the problems they've had with 10-nanometer, you know, it's you have to be cautiously optimistic. You can't say, okay, great, they're finally going to do it this time, because it's been so rocky. But off the record, I pulled some Intel folks aside. I said, tell me the truth. I'm like, is this the time? Is this it? And everybody said yes. So hopefully all that 10-nanometer Intel goodness is coming. And of course, Radeon 7 is exciting. There were rumblings a few months ago that 7-nanometer Vega wasn't coming to the consumer space because it was just too expensive with that HBM2, but it looks like it's happening. So cool stuff.
Cool stuff. You know, you just basically did the whole rundown for us. We're done now.
Good job. All right. Thanks for stopping by, folks.
Oh, I mean, yeah, no, that was a quick little turbo of certainly the highlights for us. You know, and you started with something that's of utter importance. And for me, I think this is what the show's all about. It, you know, we complain about having 180,000 of our closest friends joining us in the city, and the cab lines are long, or the Uber lines are long, but you know, and there's a sea of humanity. But actually, really for us, what the show is about is the relationships, being able to see, get some FaceTime with the folks that we work with in the OEM space, whether it be Intel, AMD, NVIDIA, Dell, Lenovo, HP, and so on. The people that are behind those brands that you know, help get that tech to market to the consumer, that's who's, I think, you know, makes it worth the trip, those folks. So I'm not going to get too sentimental here, but for me, that's really what the show is all about. And I think so. I think for you as well, Marco, right? It's great seeing the tech, but it's even better seeing the folks.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, all right. So yeah, with that in mind, let's dig right into some core tech that some of these good folks have been peddling out in Las Vegas, where the strip is long and the sights and sounds are many. Let's talk about AMD's announcements first, since they begin with the letter A. We'll go alphabetically. Why not? AMD's Radeon 7 Vega 20 graphics card was announced at the keynote by AMD CEO Lisa Su, Dr. Lisa Su. And she also introduced third gen Ryzen and just all kinds of stuff. Let's talk about Vega, Radeon 7 and Vega 20 first, Marco. What were your thoughts there? I saw it live in the suite running a game called The Division 2. I'm sure you guys are probably familiar with it. Most of them you are. But what were your thoughts about Radeon 7 and Vega 20?
So I'm going to be totally devil's advocate here, right? So on the surface, really excited. First 7-nanometer GPU. The Vega architecture, although the current gen Vega cards didn't really take the market by storm, the architecture is really advanced. So getting it down to 7-nanometer and boosting clocks, you know, I believe Lisa Su said 1.8 gigahertz stock frequency, stock boost frequency on these cards, which is a big boost versus like the 1540 of current gen cards. Plus, you know, there's more processors in there, double the memory, double the HBM2 memory. The thing that has me concerned is this is a small 7-nanometer GPU, and it's got three giant fans on the card with a huge heat sink. She didn't really talk much about power, so I'm hoping they didn't really have to crank up the voltage to get that frequency so high, and cards are going to run hot and be loud under load. I'm hoping that's not the case, but I'm really excited for the tech, you know, to see. AMD has sort of had a history the last maybe year and a half of under-promising on performance and over-delivering, like we saw it with Zen. And they basically, Lisa basically said RTX 2080 class performance out of this guy. You know, they showed a few games, and of those three games, it was right there with the RTX 2080. If that's true, and they're undercutting by a couple $100, this is really great to see AMD competing back in the high-end GPU segment with a really cost-competitive card. The only thing Vega really lacks versus the RTX series are those Tensor and RT cores, but you have to keep in mind all DX12 class GPUs can do ray tracing with Microsoft DXR. The performance is the question, but with that massive bandwidth and Vega's strong compute, it could be really interesting. I really can't wait to test it out.
I would have to agree. The card, you know, one of the criticisms, I guess, or I guess the general criticism, if you're looking at it playing devil's advocate, is that some folks are saying, hey, it doesn't bring anything new to the table. It's a shrink of Vega, and you know, no ray tracing, no, you know, fancy tech wizardry like DLSS or something like that NVIDIA brought to the table with GeForce RTX. And I would say that that's, you know, perhaps a fair criticism, but I also think 7-nanometer is a big deal. And actually, now that you mentioned power, Marco, I would say I actually got up close within a millimeter of one of those cards in a system. John just had up on the screen. They were demoing the Division 2. Tom Clancy's the Division 2 in the in their suite. And there were multiple machines running multiple different games, but I got in on that one, had the side panel off, was right up close to that card, and it was noisy in the room, but I like stuck my ear up right next to the card to try and hear it, and it was pretty quiet, and I didn't dare reach in there for fear of ESD shock and to touch it to feel how warm it was, but because I wasn't properly grounded, but it seemed to be pretty cool and comfortable running 4K Ultra with Tom Clancy's The Division. I mean, absolutely buttery smooth frame rates. And then the other thing that just popped up on the radar in the last day or so, John, I'm going to drop this link into the chat for us so you can see this and then hopefully put this up for the folks. AMD quietly slipped out in their press release for CES some benchmarks across a number of different game titles for Radeon 7. And there it is there, John, if you can scroll down to the chart and we'll try and focus on that chart. So what AMD did there, and they certainly laid out the game system involved, the specs of the system, it was set up in, but they compared it to the previous generation Radeon product. So if you look at Radeon Vega 64, that's the yellow bar there. And then the blue bar, and this is, we basically graphed all of the data. The blue bars are Radeon 7 and Vega 20. And so there you go, from Wolfenstein 2, The New Colossus, to Shadow of the Tomb Raiders, some DX12 titles there. Far Cry 5's in there. It looks like a nice jump in Far Cry 5. Some serious boosts in performance and, anywhere from, 30% to some outliers that are even higher than that. You have to take this with a grain of salt. It's provided by AMD. And so we want to always get this thing into our test labs, get this thing into our test methodology, and have an apples to apples comparison versus the previous generation on the same exact identical platform, all that good stuff that we do. But what were your thoughts about that, Marco? Kind of bold. I mean, they took like over 20 titles and just said, oh, here's your performance.
Yeah, that's really unusual. And considering we're sort of at an early stage, the cards are supposed to ship in about a month. I think it was February 9th or February 7th. I don't remember the exact date. So I wouldn't be surprised if that's AMD saying, here's some interesting numbers, but I actually expect it to probably be faster when we do our own reviews, just for the way AMD's been operating lately. So in the last few graphics cards articles I've done, if you look at Vega 64 today versus when it launched, like Vega 64 clearly outpaces the 1080 today. That wasn't the case when it launched. So, AMD had to sort of, learn their architecture and wring the maximum amount of performance from it. To see those kind of boosts with Radeon 7 already, I think it looks good. So if Vega 64 was faster than 1080, and 1080 is about in line with RTX 2070, and Radeon 7 is going to be significantly faster, I think we have a fight in that space between the RTX 2070 and 2080. So it's looking strong. Now, we have a couple of questions in the chat I'm going to jump to. Shannon's asking, do I think the inclusion of 16 gigs of HBM2 was necessary? Necessary? No. 8 gigs is perfectly fine for just about everybody unless you're running, multiple 4K monitors. But it's a nice bullet point. And if they can offer the card at the price point they're saying, it just looks good for them to have that extra memory. And for non-gaming workloads, it'll probably help. Like if you look at some of the OpenCL stuff out there. We also had a question about what combination of CPU, GPU for After Effects and Element 3D. A lot of the Adobe stuff is really optimized for Intel CPUs and NVIDIA GPUs. I just did some recent testing with Premiere doing some rendering, and the CUDA path worked really well. So I'd say the fastest Intel multi-core processor and fastest NVIDIA GPU that you can afford is ideal. Ashley 1, Tomb Raider still doesn't have DLSS. I don't think anything does except the Final Fantasy benchmark. And Shannon, cautiously optimistic is the word of the day. Yes, that's perfect.
It's interesting to see that ray tracing on the NVIDIA side of the fence, to shift gears a little bit, is seemingly getting out there a little bit more prominently up front, certainly with Battlefield 5. But DLSS hasn't made any sort of significant showing just yet. I wonder, when we were at the show and talking with the folks from NVIDIA, and even the CEO Jensen Huang commented on it, that is, they are working on that now with many game titles with many developers, and that's coming. And that was sort of his one critique, actually. Jensen had a private press conference that I was in the room for, very small, you know, 20, 25, 30 journalists, period. And he was specifically asked, what do you think about Radeon 7? And one of the things he scoffed at was it's barely as fast as a 2080. They, of course, have a 2080 Ti that's faster. And we're going to crush it when you flip on DLSS, when you flip on ray tracing. And I think that's kind of where the rubber meets the road, right? I mean, if you really want to see some breakout performance either way, perhaps NVIDIA has some leverage there if they can, get those features to market, with game developers and in-game titles, so where folks can take advantage of them across a number of titles, AAA titles that everybody's playing, popular games. So, they need to put their money where their mouth is there for sure, but it is going to be an interesting fight. And I agree with you on the cautiously optimistic about Radeon 7, guys. What do you think about the price point at $699 if we think about comparable product and then versus the previous gen Vega 64, what it's priced at these days and performance for the consumer? Good value, Marco?
I mean, I can't really say until we test it. Vega 64 just dropped to under $400, I think $380. So at $700, probably not a good value strictly if you're looking at performance per dollar when the Vega 64 is, half the price now. So, but, at the ultra high end, there's always that premium, and the card looks killer with, the metal shroud and the fans. It's going to be other secrets yet to be revealed, I'm fairly certain. So I don't think we can say. Now, in terms of Jensen's comments, one, he doesn't know how fast this card is. Two, as cool as I think DLSS technology is, so Ashen makes, asks the question, why is it taking so long to show up in games? That's interesting because NVIDIA really pitched it as, hey, the game developer gives us their assets. We run it through our supercomputer. We hand them a few megabytes and bam, they have DLSS in their game. But it's not happening that quickly. And if you look at Battlefield 5 in particular, like the showcase title, it has ray tracing, but the DLSS patch is a few months out. Why? So I think there's a disconnect somewhere there. But when DLSS is on, so I saw the game Justice with a hotkey where I can switch DLSS on and off. Looks awesome. The 3D Mark Port Royale benchmark. So DLSS is a feature test because it changes the internal rendering resolution. It's technically not comparable. But DLSS makes it look better than TAA. I don't care what anybody says, like looking side by side, unless there was some trickery going on, which I don't think there was, DLSS just looks better. It's simply clearer and nicer than TAA in that benchmark. So the technology seems good, but yeah, if nobody's adopting it, it doesn't really matter. So we'll see how things shake out in the next few months. In the short term, there's so few games that support the tech that Vega's going to be strong. If Vega's strongest in 99% of the games versus a 2080, then it looks like it's going to be a good buy at $699. I hate to say that because it's versus the lower end cards, it's priced so much more, but versus an RTX 2080, maybe it's nicer. We'll see. We have to test it. It's all speculation right now.
Yeah. No, absolutely. And I actually saw DLSS in motion at the RTX launch, where they had the Infiltrator demo with Unreal Engine 4, I think it is. And actually, again, I would agree with you. The visuals were either as good or better, and in most cases, it seemed better. And the frame rate was significantly faster. I mean, it was up north of 80 frames per second when the other machine that was running a 1080 Ti was pushing something like 40 frames per second. It was almost 2x with TAA, with standard AA on. So yeah, it's perhaps a game changer, but yeah, you got to have it in game. So hopefully, it's surprising. You would think it sounds like easier tech to implement, where ray tracing is a whole new render path. And then, the simple method of NVIDIA just saying, hey, give us your game engine. We're going to put it into our our machine learning server supercomputer, crunch it and give you back, you know, a library that you can put into your game, and we'll call it with a driver, and bang, you're getting DLSS. It's a feature enabled in your game. Seems simple, but not here yet. So yeah, competitive stuff, good stuff. Radeon 7, looking cautiously optimistic at this point, and the benchmarks are out there. So that says at least AMD is, bold enough to say, hey, here's what the performance looks like. If you want to know, you know, here's what we see. And as drivers mature, hopefully that performance will even go up. And so hopefully once we get them in, and we're hearing soon, can't say much more than that. Hopefully once we get it in, Marco will be able to kick the tires and tell you exactly where it's at. Let's move on to something else that AMD talked about. Dr. Lisa Su at the keynote, CES keynote, showed off third gen Ryzen 7 nanometer Ryzen 3000 Zen 2 desktop CPUs at CES 2019. There was actually a Cinebench run that was going about around as well. And some pretty strong performance. I was at their suite. They did not have it running. And so it wasn't available for hands-on. But Dr. Su showed it in action on stage. Marco, what were your thoughts on that? Again, cautiously optimistic, sort of almost surprised to see that ready this early, or at least running and running well.
Yeah, so this one is interesting. The benchmark was a very early Ryzen 3 versus 9900K. And the Ryzen 3, Lisa made some specific comments. So the benchmark technically was like a tie. It was within margin of error. But basically, that early sample was right there with 9900K, but at lower power. I think she said it's like 30% lower power, which makes sense because Intel's really pushing the limits of 14 nanometer with the 9900K. And this is a brand new 7 nanometer chiplet for the CPU with that 14 nanometer IO. What I think is going to be interesting when we finally test these chips is having the chiplet with that separate IO die. I don't know what that's going to do. Now, for Threadripper, that's a good thing, right? Because you eliminate a hop out to memory for the chiplets that don't have direct memory access. For the mainstream Ryzen, you now have added a hop to memory, and it's probably going to negatively impact latency. And then don't forget, there's also the latency between the CCXs, assuming the architecture is the same in there. So I think for heavy compute workloads like Cinebench, where you can mask latency, Ryzen 3 is going to be strong, but I think this is going to be one of those launches where some stuff looks great and some stuff's kind of quirky because of that new IO and memory controller arrangement. I'm speculating, yeah. But I think that's going to be something to look out for.
Yeah. Now it is, you know, to their credit, it's at least close to the CPU where, you know, it's chip and wire, it's on board, it's a multi-chip module. It's not on die. So yeah, but there's a hop there. There's latency associated with that. PCI Express Gen 4, that's kind of cool. That's on there. And and it's also socket compatible with a BIOS update. That's what I was told by AMD's good old Mr. Pryor, James Pryor. I met him in the suite. Good guy. It's early. But that could be fun. And, when you talk about, you know, comparing it versus Intel's big gun, you know, desktop, enthusiast chip, eight core enthusiast chip, like a 9900K, that's a pretty good showdown. Pretty, at least, you know, bold, they step out and take it on core for core. I was told that there were supposed to be some, you know, single threaded, you know, standard basic IPC improvements. Certainly you would expect that with Zen 2. But we'll have to see when it comes out. What do we got in the comments? Anything exciting there we should be talking about, Marco? Did you see anything there? Francois chimed in.
Yeah, Francois just starting trouble with Shannon. I think did we miss any questions? Let me scroll up a second here. Nope, just Shannon speculating on DLSS, DXR, and RTX. Same, basically what we were saying. I think we're good. Unless Francois throws a bomb at us in there.
He's always good for a couple of grenades. Hey, let's move on then to Intel, and they showed off. Intel shows off 10 nanometer Ice Lake confirms system on track for holiday 2019 debut. Systems on track. So, 10 nanometer Ice Lake. What were your thoughts about this announcement? Again, you queried some folks, kind of cornered them, gave them the square look in the eye and said, is this thing for real now? What are we talking about? And what were your thoughts about the reaction we got there? We got some, you know, strong reactions.
Yeah. So I kind of have the feeling I'm kind of going back to the Conroe days, right? When AMD had the Athlons and AMD was the leader. And when Intel had the Pentium 4 and, you know, their engineers went back to the drawing board, came out with Conroe, and just crushed AMD. So, no matter what, a decade or so, I kind of got the feeling Intel, they have that fire again. The focus is there. It's all a matter of delivering on 10 nanometer. But if they do, you know, we're going to see IPC improvements, frequency improvements, power improvements. It's going to look very good this year if Intel is on track with all this 10 nanometer goodness that they're talking about. I think, you know, I'm really excited how this year could shake out with new high-end GPUs, new CPUs all around again. So lots of really exciting stuff. I have a feeling this is the time for Intel to come through, and it's going to look really strong.
Yeah, I would agree. And I actually saw Sunny Cove in action a few weeks ago in California when we met with the Intel folks in their architecture day. They were running systems. Sure, they were, you know, demo platforms, you know, bring up boards, if you will, mobile chips with integrated 11th gen graphics, Gen 11 graphics, excuse me. That's how they would term it. They skipped Gen 10, went right from 9 to 11. This one goes to 11. And I would say that even the graphics performance certainly looked promising and strong there as well. If they can get that thing shipping, and I think it's slated for second half of 2019, if I'm not mistaken, they are claiming, you know, in time for the holiday shopping season, that could be an impressive platform to build many a notebook on. I'm hopeful for it as well, especially the graphics side of things. They've got some interesting new technology on board. It's we saw a side-by-side demo between Gen 9 and Gen 11 running. I forget what the game was, but it was a fighting game, and it, you know, both were running at 1080p, high image quality settings, and the Gen 11 system was playing it pretty darn smooth, while the Gen 9 was choking, like, frankly, like, you know, trying to game on integrated graphics usually does. So maybe we'll see some good 1080p gaming performance on integrated graphics with some of the newer titles. They also have things like adaptive rate shading now, so some new features on board. They've also got adaptive refresh technology on board to support that for next generation monitors. And you know, jitter and tear-free gaming. So that's good stuff. And Intel seems to be on point and executing as well at this point. So it'll be a fun 2019, I think, with some new technology. They also stepped out, Marco, with an expansion on their 9th-gen core portfolio. What'd you think about the addition of the new processors, some new high-end, you know, enthusiast desktop processors in the 9th-gen family?
So, I mean, it's all good stuff. The 9900K, extremely strong chip, very powerful, just all around really strong chip, fastest IPC, fastest single-thread performance, great multi-thread performance with 8 cores. And to sort of expand the lineup, like, again, there's still 14 nanometer parts. These aren't true next gen parts, but to get all the fixes of the 9th gen and to expand the lineup into more affordable chips with different core counts and clocks. But nice, you know, you're looking at max turbo frequencies up to 5 gigahertz on the, I think it's that 9900KF, 4.9 for the next step down. You know, you're talking mid 4 gigahertz and up for most of the chips. So really powerful stuff, and to bring that latest, the current latest core that you can buy down into lower price points, I think, you know, it's all good stuff. Not terribly exciting in terms of, hey, here's something new, but it's nice to have more options. So yeah, no, that's a welcome development for sure.
Yeah, yeah, no, absolutely. Good stuff from the folks at Intel. Let's take a little step back and talk about some of the notebooks a little bit more that we saw at CES. And then we'll move on to something related as well in the graphics space. But I'd like to just shift gears back a little bit and talk about some notebooks we saw that were sort of standout. And specifically, I was thinking Dell and Lenovo. You mentioned the XPS 13 and Frost White. John, I'm going to drop this in there for you. This is kind of going off the menu, guys. But I think they were prominent enough that we should probably talk about them. There was a couple of machines. So the XPS 13 and Frost White steals the show with a major updates and a key fix. I just dropped that link into the chat, John. There it is there. We gave it a Best of CES award. And we had a little preview up of it with some benchmarks. Whiskey Lake on board now, Intel Whiskey Lake, and a new camera. Marco, is this your dream machine? I know you like that petite little frame.
If I had my choice, probably yes. I happen to have the one model before this, so I doubt I will be upgrading. I have a 9370. This is a 9380. So I have the white with the spun glass and the gold exterior. So it's a killer machine. I mean, that looks beautiful though, and I really don't care about the webcam position. I think I've used the webcam on my notebook exactly zero times, so it doesn't really matter to me that it's that funky angle. But that was like the only complaint people had with the XPS, one of the only complaints people had with the XPS 13. So to fix that, they've nearly perfected the 13-inch notebook, in my opinion.
Yeah, yeah. It will be interesting to see how it shakes out from battery life. We have not stepped through our testing on that. We've done some initial performance testing. There is a review in process. We have that machine in-house, so stay tuned to Hot Hardware. That is a beautiful machine. It is now updated, and yes, the nose cam is gone. It's up in the top of the display, and it's just ever so slightly thicker bezel up top there. They really miniaturized the camera to do that. So you can't complain about that anymore, and refreshed with Whiskey Lake. So good stuff from the folks at Dell. And then one of my favorite daily drivers is the Lenovo ThinkPad X1 Carbon has been refreshed. And I'm going to drop that into the chat window as well for you, John. And I think you showed it a little bit earlier when we briefly talked about these. But the ThinkPad X1 Carbon is a format really that I've been fond of for many years. It's a 14-inch format, 14-inch display, and for me that's kind of perfect. I feel a little cramped on a 13-inch machine. And then they, you know, Lenovo took this 14-inch. Display format and really shrunk it down. You've got very thin bezels. The thing is really much closer to a 13-inch frame. So now it's even lighter. I want to say it's 2.4 pounds or something like that. It's super light. Whiskey Lake on board. The display is gorgeous. They've got a HDR display, full Dolby Vision compatible HDR display. I'm trying to think what else was new with that machine. It also earned a Best of CES award for us as well. What am I missing on that for features that the X1 Carbon had, Marco? What am I missing there?
Yeah, no, you're right. Down to 2.4 from 2.49 pounds. Improved screen, had the card slot for LTE connectivity. The full Lenovo keyboard with touchpad updated. With the trackpoint, updated touchpad, just basically all the features you can want in an ultrabook. Plus they made the carbon fiber texture on the lid sort of more prominent to give it a little more.
That's what I was missing.
Yeah. Just lots of little improvements all around. The only negative versus the previous is the micro SD card slot is gone.
Yeah, and that really kind of ticked me off. I'll be honest with you. It got a Best of CES. We felt certainly with the updates, the display, it's arguably one of the best notebook displays in the 13, 14 inch category out there. And one of the best keyboard designs. That's why I like it as a daily driver. And then adding that carbon fiber hatch on the lid is just cool. It looks great. It does a little bit better at hiding fingerprints. So that's nice. But yeah, they took away the SD card slot, and now I'm going to be dongling an SD card reader for my camera. Ah, why'd you do that, Lenovo?
You know, you're probably better off, because the way that you had to sort of pry off your current one, it's going to be faster to just plug in a card reader.
Yeah, no, I know. But stick it in the side of the thing, you know, like they do on the XPS 13. I hate to say it. There's just a little slot, yeah. And you can do a little pop-out slot. But yeah, no, it's still a great machine. We think the world of that platform, the X1 Yoga platform, or excuse me, the X1 Karma platform. But good stuff from the folks at Lenovo. Let's shift gears back now to the core desktop community again and talk about what AMD had to show. We could even talk about some of the notebook products they had as well, but let's talk about RTX 2060. GeForce RTX 2060 has been launched. Marco, you did a deep dive review on that bad boy, and you are thinking it is probably one of the best bang for your bucks on the market. Is that a fair assessment, or is that being a little too generous?
I think it's a fair assessment. Before I jump into that, just two quick things from the chat. Francois said the Lenovo team in Yokohama is the best team to work with. He loves those engineers. They do make some great stuff, and Francois has, you know, firsthand knowledge, so I'm going to take his word on that one. And Ashen's asking, is it time for people to move away from 1080p gaming? Well, you know, ideally, you want everybody on the highest resolution possible with the highest performance possible, but there's, you know, not everybody has the budget to do it. 1080p gaming, it's not bad. When you're spoiled and you have a high-end setup with 4K, it's better. But yeah. I mean, ideally, everyone is going to eventually. It's just the amount of performance required to keep frame rates high, you know, at 1440p and up in every game. You know, you need a lot of juice, and not everybody can sort of pull that off. But yeah, I'd love to see everybody move away from 1080p, but it's not going to happen quickly. Now,
I'll jump in on that. I want to jump in on that too, actually. Yeah, as well. 1080p, I think, is important depending on display size as well. If you're on a notebook, 1080p gaming is, you know, what you know a lot of times what you want. And then if you're on a smaller display, let's say it's, you know, 24, 23 inch, maybe even up to 27. You know, do you need that resolution in exchange for a hit in frame rate to go to 4K? 1440p is a sweet balance, but I think 1080p, you know, certainly if you looked at the Steam hardware survey and looked at resolutions people were running at, 1080p is so mainstream that I think there's justification for it still for a long time until you know, it's just so automatic that everything can just game at that resolution. But, you know, then again, they're going to turn up the eye candy even more with better features. Game developers will find ways to make game engines look more realistic and better that will take more horsepower. So yeah, that's my two cents. I'm sorry, Marco, go ahead. Talk about the RTX 2060.
No problem. So RTX 2060, really interesting. Before this card launched, there were rumors all over the place that it wasn't going to do, you know, wasn't going to have RT and Tensor cores. It was going to be the low-end model, not do ray tracing. Yeah, that all turned out to not be true. All those rumors were completely wrong. So the RTX 2060 is basically a smaller RTX 2070, same GPU on a smaller PCB with some functional blocks disabled in the GPU. So I'm going to do two quick comparisons here. So the 2060 and 2070, both based on the TU106 GPU. Really, the only difference is 2070 has 36 SMs versus 30 in the 2060. That obviously brings the CUDA core count down and brings the Tensor and RT core count down. So there's 288 Tensor cores in 2070, 240 in the 2060, 36 RT cores in 2070, and 30 in the 2060. Same 8 gigs of memory, but connected through a thinner 192-bit interface, but giant 10.8 billion transistor GPU, still made on that, you know, 12-nanometer FinFET process. Now, versus the previous gen 1060, it's just in a completely different class. So the one number that's the most telling to me, the 1060 is a 4.4 billion transistor GPU. This one's 10.8 billion, more than double the transistors in it. So, you know, you have a huge increase in SMs and CUDA cores, obviously massive increase in memory bandwidth with that GDDR6. So what you end up seeing in the charts in terms of performance, the RTX 2060 is basically, it'll trade blows with the 1080. 1080 is generally faster, but it crushes a 1070 and 1060. And at an introductory price of $350, yes, it's $50 higher than the 1060 debuted at, which, you know, it stinks. You want it to debut at the same price as its predecessor. But even at $350, it's cheaper, way cheaper than the 1080. It's cheaper than the 1070s were when I looked at pricing for the article. It's cheaper than Vega 64, but it's right in the mix with those high-end cards. But it offers, you know, RTX technology. So in my opinion, if you're spending $350 on a GPU, you might as well get the most advanced, even if it's technically not the highest performance across the board. So for $350 for this card, it's not cheap. It's kind of hard to say it's mainstream, but it's to get into RTX technology at $350 with a card that's competitive with more expensive GPUs at this point, I think it's nice.
Yeah, that was my initial reaction too when I heard that, you know, ray tracing cores are on board, DLSS will be supported, of course. Well, no, actually, you couldn't even assume that either, right? Tensor cores didn't necessarily have to be on this lower end SKU. And so, yeah, that's what occurs to me is that 2060 having those extra elements. We've talked about this before, NVIDIA making that silicon bet that ray tracing and DLSS will be important. There's a silicon bet there. You're spending silicon real estate on special function processing engines. And to do that, you've really got to have the courage of your conviction. To do that again and add it again into a $350 graphics card says we're betting that this technology is going to be important for the mass market. A $350 priced demographic of the market. And that's kind of bold, and it's I think the right thing. People were rumoring, you know, there was a lot of scuttlebutt that the 2060 wasn't going to have that. It was going to be an 1160 or some derivative thereof. But no, here we go. You've got it. And actually, you know, we've demoed it, and Jensen Huang, the CEO of NVIDIA, showed it on stage running Battlefield 5 with ultra ray tracing settings on, and you know, ultra RTX settings on, and 1080p, and it was, you know, perfectly playable frame rates. I want to say it was pushing you know, close to 60 frames per second. So need more game titles, but yeah, it's ray tracing can be done on it. And the price point is you know, for, you know, a mainstream, a much more mainstream price point than certainly the higher end cards. I call it a win too, but let's see how they do, right? With those game titles.
Yeah, you know, and the Founders Edition card I tested, well, I don't guess there isn't a Founders Edition. The NVIDIA reference card I tested was really overclockable, super simple tweaks. It went from 1680 boost up to over 2 gigahertz. So I want to see what partner cards are going to do with beefier coolers. I think, you know, if you see significantly overclocked 2060s for right around the $350 price point, that's really strong. Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. Good stuff. Always good to have some new tech to talk about, and tech that's achievable for the average Joe and Jane gamer, not just the folks that have disposable income at hand, you know. So that's good stuff for sure. Let's move on to something else from NVIDIA that we were surprised to see so many of actually at the show. Everywhere where a manufacturer had a gaming notebook offering, pretty much across the board, there was GeForce RTX under the hood. GeForce RTX Mobile, 2070s, 2080s, and 2060s. And we saw a number of them. Here's a roundup of elite gaming notebooks with NVIDIA GeForce RTX Mobile GPUs. There's the Acer Predator. That's a big boy, Triton 900. But you've got the Alienware M17, also the Alienware M15, which I did a full review on not too long ago. Me and MJ did. So that's a beautiful machine. You certainly got a big boy from Asus, the ROG Mothership. Have to check that one out. That's a freaky machine. Disconnectable keyboard or a detachable keyboard with a big stand-up display setup. It's kind of wild. The Zephyrus S, of course, and the Strix Scar 2. Lots of machines, HP Omen, on and on and on. Main Gear, Origin PC, they all had them. And I wanted to get your thoughts on that, Marco, because I'm surprised, frankly, with the transistor count and the perhaps the power draw as a result of lighting up all those transistors, that you're still getting them into a max Q. Granted, they're max Q. They're probably going to be downclocked. We don't know exactly the speeds and feeds yet. But you have ray tracing enabled capability in a notebook now with RTX 20 class performance. Thoughts? Kind of cool.
Very cool. I'm actually not surprised, because if you looked at power, NVIDIA was able to get basically desktop Pascal chips into mobile form factors. And the RTX chips, despite being much bigger in terms of transistor count and die size, power is not completely out of line. So if they're binning and getting the best of the best chips and able to run at lower voltages, I'm sure they're tweaking the base and boost clocks. So it's, even though branding is just going to say RTX 2080, there'll be max Q on there, but it's not going to be exactly equivalent to the desktop GPU performance. But yeah, you are going to have full RTX capabilities and Turing GPUs not chopped down in notebooks. And that's pretty freaking awesome.
Yeah. No, it's interesting stuff. We'll have to see how it performs. Certainly, you know, if you're lighting up, ray tracing cores and gaming at high image quality settings like those GPUs are capable of, you're not going to be getting any kind of battery life. You're going to stay tethered to a wall. But when you don't, you know, when you don't need to, a platform, for example, like Dell's Alienware M15, sub-5-pound notebook, I believe, just going from memory, and you're not tethered to the wall, you've kind of got the best of both worlds. You've got to get a machine that can game and kick some serious butt gaming. 4.78 pounds. I just pulled that up. I'll drop this in. This review went live just before the show. There you go. It's in the chat now, John. So sub-5-pound machine. When you're not gaming, portable and thin, it's certainly dense and compact for sure. But, these thin and light Max Q design notebooks like this Alienware machine now will have 20 series on board, 6-core processors, RTX 20. I mean, talk about, some serious horsepower for gamers and content creation professionals alike on a notebook platform. Man, good stuff. We get excited with all this advancement sometimes, just because it's cool to see how much more you can do with how much less bulk these days. Good stuff.
Definitely.
Yeah, and that's kind of it for the initial roundup of stuff from CES. But let's talk about a couple more things, because we've got a little extra time here, and I want to call out a couple of impressive products.
Can we just cover one other thing quick with NVIDIA and answer a couple questions?
Oh, please do.
So we forgot to mention NVIDIA supporting Adaptive Sync. NVIDIA also announced along with RTX 2060 that they're launching a G-Sync compatibility program where they're going to test every Adaptive Sync display on the market, which basically means they're going to test every FreeSync display, and ones that work well will get the G-Sync compatible moniker and in a new driver on January 15th. And moving forward, Adaptive Sync will be enabled. So NVIDIA can support the Adaptive Sync / FreeSync with non-G-Sync monitors. Now, the kicker is, of the 400 plus monitors they tested so far, only 12 were certified. And in seeing some of the demos, you can understand why NVIDIA didn't want to certify a few. You know, we have a video up on the YouTube channel that shows, you know, one FreeSync monitor just blinking black when it hits certain refresh rates, and another had weird banding. So, you know, and the frequency ranges, the refresh rate ranges where FreeSync or adaptive sync is supported is kind of wide on these monitors. So there's lots of differences. NVIDIA's way more tightly controlled with G-Sync, but it's nice that they're supporting this. They should have done it a long time ago to take away a bullet point from the other guys, but good development. NVIDIA sort of used it to throw a little salt or a little sand in the face of the other guys, but overall, this is a good development, I think. And then we have some questions. Why no 1440p plus screens for those laptops with 2080 Max Q? I think it's because most of them want that super fast refresh rate, and it's just a matter of sourcing those screens. It's, you know, 1080p or 4K at this point for just about all of them. And what am I missing here? We had Shannon talking about BF5. We have that article up and said, did you guys look at the Area 51M? Yes, Dave actually was up close and personal with that thing early. We were privileged to see it early. Dave, why don't you tell Shannon about that Area 51M, that nut job of a
Yeah, and actually, before we move on, because that was one of the things I wanted to cover. There were two things that stuck out to me that were kind of like, wow, at the show. These were, that was one of the wow products. You know, the thing with adaptive sync with NVIDIA, there's a lot of folks going back and forth about how NVIDIA's, you know, throwing salt on some of these monitors that don't cut muster. And what does it mean? Did NVIDIA finally acquiesce and say, hey, look, you know, Intel's going to have this in their next generation graphics product, by the way. Gen 11 graphics has basically, you know, what is essentially FreeSync or standard open standard adaptive sync. You know, you can look at it any way you want. It like you said, Marco, it's a good development that they're now going to support this in a driver and open up adaptive sync on a GeForce for more available product on the market. Bottom line, that's it. You know, and you can bitch about that any way you want, though, right?
Well, folks, you know, I thought they should have done it sooner because it would have given NVIDIA a clear opportunity to say, hey, if you want to save the money, we're going to support this, but we think G-Sync is better. The premium solution is G-Sync. If you test it side by side, you're probably going to feel that way. And honestly, it's not, you probably would. NVIDIA is so tight on the development of G-Sync displays. They're almost all kick-ass killer displays. And versus those $7,500 cheaper monitors, when adaptive sync or variable refresh rates are used, G-Sync solution is usually better. So like they could have, they still do, but they really could have clearly positioned G-Sync as that premium option, but also offered the more affordable solution to buyers. So I thought they should have done it sooner, but the fact that it's happened now is just fine.
Yeah. All right. So let's get back to Shannon's question and call out, because I think it was a strong one. I'm going to put this one in the chat window for you, John, and you can pull it up as well. Inside Alienware's Area 51M, as in Mary, killer gaming laptop with modular GeForce RTX graphics. Alienware's Area 51M. Now, if you're familiar with the Alienware product line, Area 51 has always been a desktop. They actually did an Area 51 notebook years and years and years ago. I want to say like 2003. This, you know, for a long time, this moniker, the Area 51 moniker, has been only desktop exclusive. And John, if you could leave that one up and kind of scroll down the page, there's a lot to talk about with this guy. But essentially, this is their 17-inch platform. Totally redesigned. They have a new redesign, industrial design signature for the machine now, and it is different than any design signature we've seen recently for the Alienware product line. It's their legend. They call it the legend design signature. Wild looking machine, really a little bit more subdued than perhaps the previous gen. You don't have that edgy look with triangular shapes of the previous generation 15 and 17 inch machines. So a little bit more rounded corners, beveled, tucked in along the edge of the machine, and flat In this case, there's two finishes. There's a white and then there's a black finish, and they're both flat finishes. There's the machine there on video. Frank Azor, VP and GM of Dell XPS and Alienware, stepped through it for me in New York. And the guy was just bubbling with pride about this machine because it does show a lot of serious engineering chops that Dell executed on with it. And what you have with this machine is essentially an entirely upgradable, and this is timely, there you go, right on the video, entirely upgradable notebook platform, gaming notebook platform. So you have a socketable CPU, you have an 8-core desktop chip in there, a 9900K. You have up to 64 gigs of RAM in SODIMM, four SODIMM sockets. And then you also have modular GeForce graphics. And man, my timing's great. There's Frank holding the RTX 2080 GeForce graphics module that Dell designed. Now, MXM was a module design that was around for a while. NVIDIA sort of has moved away from it. We've heard mixed reports on that, though, because there was another manufacturer talking about an MXM design that they had in a product. But Dell engineered this module right there themselves. So what they will do now is, let's say you buy this machine in Area 51 with a 2060, and you know you're with that level of performance, you're good with that for now. And later on down the road, you want to go to a 2070 or 2080, you can do that. So everything's upgradable. There's even on the bottom of the machine, when you remove the cover, and there's a plastic housing underneath the main finish cover, it has instructions on each area of the machine, how to remove and where to get at, where each component is located. So you've got, you know, whether it's the M2 slot for storage, whether it's the SODIMM slots for memory, whether it's even the wireless LAN card, GPU, CPU socket, it's all marked out. You know, it gives you the tool type and shows you where, you know, how to remove and get access to the product. It's designed to have user serviceability, not just Dell. Dell recommends you buy the components pre-qualified from them, of course. Doesn't mean you have to. CPUs, obviously, is a CPU. A desktop CPU is a CPU. The GPU module, obviously, is a custom from Dell. You'll have to get that from them. Memory, obviously, is industry standard, interchangeable. So really an impressive product, and it's thinner and lighter than the previous generation 17-inch Alienware product as well. They did a lot of engineering with magnesium alloy and aluminum in the frame to make it super efficient from a weight standpoint. So I was thoroughly impressed with that machine. What did you think about it, Marco? I know Shannon thought it was wild here in the chat too.
So that thing's nuts. I still prefer to game on something. If I'm going to go hardcore gaming, I'm going to do it on a big desktop PC, but I know that I'm actually probably in the minority these days. Most gamers today love to have those super powerful gaming notebooks, especially if you're traveling to LANs and competing on the road. So yeah, that machine particularly is just, I don't want to say engineering marvel, but Dell really, you know, really turned things up with that machine. They cranked it up a few notches and came out with just, I think it really looks good. And to have that kind of horsepower and upgradability and flexibility and performance, I think it's pretty awesome, whether you like those form factors or not.
Yeah, I would agree. Folks looking for a desktop replacement machine, that thing is just, it's pretty killer. We're going to get one in for review, so stay tuned for the deep dive on that. I will have that in-house. I'm going to get my grubby geek mitts on that sucker. Let's talk real quick, and then we got to wrap because we're hitting the bottom of the hour. Let's talk about HP's Omen X Imperium 65-inch 144Hz G-Sync HDR display. Mark, you gamed on that thing. HDR displays at 65-inch gaming. Man, talk about fun and frolic. What did you think about that? And then we'll turbo and close out the contest winners.
So that thing, they actually built that thing for me. So the NVIDIA Shield made me cut my cable and then it's got an NVIDIA Shield built in. Couple that with a super fast, super bright, beautiful HDR 65-inch display with 4K resolution and a high refresh rate. There, except for that $5,000 price tag, there is nothing to complain about. That thing is awesome.
Yeah, check that out if you get a chance. I'll drop a link in the chat for the for the video demo we did at CES live at the Digital Experience Show. But Marco, we've got some winners for the Lenovo Hot Holiday Giveaway, smart displays and a Star Wars AR kit up for grabs. Do you have those guys in front of you? Do you want to declare who our winners are before we sign off here?
Let me get them. I thought you were going to do it, but I do have your list right in front of me.
You do, okay.
Let me make sure I'm looking at the right one, 134. So this is the list. Let me just make sure I get the order right. All right. So the winners of our Lenovo giveaway, first grand prize. Let me start at the bottom. I take it back. The winner of the Star Wars AR kit, Joseph C. Pianta. I hope I'm pronouncing that correct. The winner of the 8-inch smart display, Elizabeth Newsom. And the grand prize winner, Jarrett Stewart. We will contact you all through email, and we will also post on the site if you're not watching. But winners have been picked. We hope you guys enjoy the prizes.
There you go. Yeah, Joe, Elizabeth, and Jarrett. Stay tuned. We'll be in touch to contact you and get your shipping information to get you these prizes from the good folks at Lenovo. The Lenovo Hot Holiday Giveaway. We've got some smart displays and an AR Star Wars AR kit coming your way. So good stuff. Make sure you hit thumbs up and subscribe to get notified when we go live every week. We try and go Wednesdays at 5:30, but we had to bump it around this week for CES today at 2:30. But Wednesdays at 5:30. That's where you'll find us here at hothardware.com on the YouTubes, twitter.com/hothardware, facebook.com/hothardware, all over the web. And that's about it. Happy New Year, everybody. Thanks for stopping by, Marco. Want to sign off and say goodbye to our viewers?
How could I possibly top what you just did? Goodbye, everybody.
John's rushing us. Thanks for stopping by, folks. Take care and have a great one.